short story, Wait Your Turn, which is quite different, quite strange, so bear with me, I suppose. But if you were a fan of the old B-movies, especially the old monster movies, you might, hopefully you'll appreciate it. Wait Your Turn. "Step right up," says the old guy in suspenders and a fisherman's hat standing on the edge of the pier. "Get your tickets." "Excuse me, sir, madam, little boy." "Please, be patient. There's plenty of time to catch the boat. Can you see them there in the murky depths? Step closer." "Here, take my hand. It's not too spotted with blood. Let me help you aboard." How did we arrive in the dark waters of this place? I don't know how you got here, but it seems as if I've been sliming my way along the bottom my entire life, paddling to the surface only in the evening to scare up dinner. But it didn't used to be this way. You see, though I've always been green, breathed through gills, had webbed hands and feet with razor-sharp claws, I haven't always been a monster. And I didn't live at the bottom of the lagoon, either. I had a cabin in the hills outside Los Angeles, and I lived a leisurely existence, dipping in the pond whenever I felt myself drying out. How could I know my Walden would become a lagoon? Her hair was the color of a red coral found only in the Mediterranean. Most people are surprised by that fact, since the films were in black and white. "You'll go blind," I said the first time I saw her, staring at the sun like that. We were beginning to shoot that afternoon. "I have lids," she said. She sat in the chaise lounge, her back to me, so I didn't know her eyes were closed. I approached, her head with an easy grasp of my 3-inch claws, but I wasn't prepared for the startling succulence of her beauty, her breasts, perfect sea sponges. "I don't suppose you've ever seen the sun through closed eyes," she said, opening her own. "No," I replied, gazing down into green lilies that will float forever upon the surface of my mind. Suddenly, I wished my gills were not so apparent. I could feel the spiny ridge along my back poking up through the back of my t-shirt. I wanted to change the subject to the courtship behavior of carp, the mating rituals of sea lampreys, something I knew more about. "The reds are so intense, it's as if they aren't real," she went on. "And when you open your eyes, fireworks." "Movie magic," I said. "Yes," she replied, a smile curling across her lips. Her name was Julia, my co-star in the first Creature film, the only one of my co-stars who had any talent, the only one I will remember, the one who could make me forget. I didn't eat people then, so she had nothing to fear. I ate fish when I could get them, and in a pinch I could live on berries, chew the bark off trees whenever I was on land for an extended length of time. I know what you're thinking. If I had gills, how could I breathe air? But you're forgetting about the longings inside me, the ones they surgically expanded in that third god-awful movie, The Creature Walks Among Us. How else did you think I could breathe whenever I left the lagoon? I can stay out of water for hours at a time. It's hardly worth mentioning how I got the job. One day on the beach, while a former girlfriend was massaging suntan lotion into my back, you'd be surprised how easily green skin can burn. A man appeared, a pale man with a top hat and a coat so big his hands disappeared in his sleeves. He said he was an agent. You see how droll it all sounds. He said that I should be in movies. Then he wrote the number of his friend on the back of his card. They were about to make a film about an Amazonian monster, he said. The next day I went down to the studio. I was a natural. It didn't matter that I couldn't act. They would teach me to roar, wave my arms about, and walk with that stiff-legged monster gait. Personally, I think they were pleased to save on the costume. They never could figure out how to fit a scuba tank into that getup. Movie magic is all about illusion. How easy it is for us to deceive ourselves, to be deceived. I learned that quickly on the set of the 3 movies I made in the mid-50s, each one worse than the last, yet each one containing within it the seeds of greatness. They turned the backlot at Universal into such a perfect replica of an Amazonian lagoon that the first time I walked on the set, I forgot for a moment where I was, who I was. I called it the Devonian Pole. We began filming with the scene where I meet Julia. She dove in, her movements in the water, more beautiful than the sleekest silver fish, more graceful than the pulsing of any jelly. I swam beneath her, watching from below, the dappled sunlight upon her white limbs, her green bathing suit hypnotizing me. I fought off the urge to grab her, to pull her under, to keep her with me. Started to reach for her ankle several times, but always pulled away. I wonder what it was that kept my hand at bay. The play of sunlight on her skin still haunts me. In the end, all I could do was watch. "He looked kind of a little funny in the pool," Julia said as we waited for them to set up the next scene, the one where I killed the archaeologist's 2 assistants. "Are you using the Stanislavski method?" She lit a cigarette and placed it between her lips. I hesitated. Then asked if she didn't mind if I had one as well, I didn't smoke, but I needed time to think. I followed her lead, putting the cigarette into my lips and inhaling, but unable to taste a thing. Kelp had ruined my taste buds long ago. Casually blowing smoke, I asked, "What creature movies did he play in?" She laughed. Not just any laugh, but the kind you'll fall in love with. A full-bodied guffaw. "No, silly," she said. "He was an acting teacher. He really seemed to get into that role, so I thought, oh my God, you're too much." Frustrated over my inability to taste the tobacco, I tried sticking the cigarette into one of my gill slits while Julia was talking. I could hear her laughter across the set even as I played the next scene, shuffling into the archaeologist's research tent and crushing the heads of his frightened assistants. Making movies wasn't so bad. Lots of waiting around by the swimming pool while they set up the next shot. Julia and I had lots of time to chat. We talked about everything. It was all so beautiful. That's what they teach us, isn't it? Lesson one, love makes everything beautiful. Lesson two, there are no monsters here, or if there are, they live in dark, dank places like swamps or lagoons. One day, towards the end of filming, she asked me if I wanted kids. I had to admit I hadn't thought about it before. "But what if they look like me?" I asked. Then I would love their little gills and kiss their green skin," she replied. 3 weeks later, we were married and bought a house in the suburbs. And for 9 months, I'd never been happier. The first film was a huge success. There was talk of a sequel. Then Julia told me she was pregnant. There's only one thing worse than being treated like a monster: watching others treat your child as a monster. "Maybe it's not such a good idea," I told Julia one night when we were in bed. "The world's not ready for a gill boy." She told me I wasn't ready for a gill boy and turned her back to me. I lay awake many a night waiting for our son to be born, wondering how to protect him. The boy was perfect. 10-something fingers, 10 webless toes. I checked for gills behind his ears, with the slightest tint of green in his skin. Nothing. Pink as the inside of a watermelon. But all was not well. The boy didn't sleep, crying and grunting all night, and Julia went into a depression, refusing to get out of bed. I loved the boy, held him each night in the dark, bouncing him on my knee, pacing the living room with him in my arms, trying to get him to sleep. Before long, I knew where each floorboard would creak before I stepped. Then, one night, everything changed. It seemed no matter what I did, it wasn't enough to comfort him. Cradling, shoulder hold, football hold, pacifier, he screamed and screamed, cries resounding in the dark. My pacing grew frantic. Instead of tickling his cheek, waiting for a smile, I held him tightly to me, rocking him violently. And still, he screamed louder, until I wondered what sort of creature I held in my arms. Standing beneath the living room window, I searched his face in the moonlight, but I never peered too long into it, afraid of what I might see. That he was human. That he was monstrous. That he had nothing to do with me. That he had everything to do with me. I grew to fear those nights alone with the baby, while Julia remained in her own self-imposed darkness. I'd stand in the doorway of his room, afraid to enter, waiting for the scream that signaled his waking. Looking into the crib, I begged him to stop, but he just kept flailing his little arms and legs. It was then I grabbed him, shaking him as I moved him from one position to the next, unable to comfort him, his shrieking cry of demand for more. "I can't give it," I screamed, as the first morning's glow lit the horizon. It was then I gazed down into that pink, scrunched-up face. I'll never know if it was the sinister light of early morning playing tricks, but what I saw terrified me. And when the baby opened his mouth to cry again, I felt myself falling into that dark hole. I left Julie and the baby that morning, walked out with so much as a word. Movie stars don't have bags under their eyes from pacing their living room all night. They don't smell of spit up and sour milk. The first movie had been a huge success. The sequel was already underway, and I was the talk of the town. They expected a Playboy, so I gave it to them. Traveling from party to party, I stayed out all night, only to wake up in some starlit swimming pool. Women threw themselves at my webbed feet. They loved running their hands over my scaly green skin, kissing my puckered fish mouth. For a time, I shacked up with that blonde. What was her name in the second film? Julia called often, but I couldn't answer. Then the third film was released, and the bad reviews rolled in. Julia hired an ichthyologist to determine, quote, why I was afraid of commitment. And the studio declared me a has-been. The blonde kicked me out and moved in with the teenage werewolf. She said I was yesterday's news. It was over. I went a little crazy. At the time, I was living at the mock-up of Florida's Ocean Harbor Oceanarium. You know, the set for the second film. I figured, why not? They had a tank there, easy access to fish, and I needed my own space. It was one morning after I'd had a little too much to drink that the ichthyologist decided it was a good time to join me in my tank and have a little heart-to-heart. He asked me if I thought my behavior was responsible. I wanted to tell him, look around. Do you see anyone acting responsibly in this town? Instead, I tore his arms off, left him bleeding in the tank, breakfast for the sharks. I roared. I bellowed as I was taught to do. I leapt from the tank and stalked Hollywood Boulevard. People screamed and ran from my sight, just like in the movies. I wandered the streets until I reached the outskirts of the city. Tired, hungry, and alone, I nearly dried out before I spotted a tall Ferris wheel rising out of the desert. In The Revenge of the Creature, the second film, they sold tickets for people to view me at Ocean Harbor, and that gave me an idea. Surely the ringmaster would see the value of the Gill Man as an attraction. He did. My tank sat between Spider-Woman and Dog Boy. We made quite the set piece. Children gawked at us. Some of them even threw rocks, pieces of bubblegum. At least until they put out one of Spider-Woman's eyes. Then the ringmaster put a glass shield before our cages. I wonder why I endured the derision of the children, the sexual innuendos of the adults. They wanted Spider-Woman and I to get it on. Was my need for the adulation of the crowd that strong? Did I need love that much? So you don't believe me. It wasn't about love. It never is. If you understand that, you're smarter than I. Perhaps you don't belong here at all. But this is not the kind of story where I blame the world for persecuting me, for bringing me to this sorry point. Let me get that straight. I take full responsibility for my actions. Really. And the carnival wasn't a bad life. 3 squares a day, a tank to sleep in. Yet in each leering face that passed before me, in each mocking eye, I searched for Julia. She showed up a couple months later, walking in the long line of spectators, looking as if she were afraid of what she might find. Panting wildly, his tail going erect, Dog Boy spotted her first. From his own cage, he signaled with his head as if to say, "Look at that hot lassie." Upon eyeing her, it was as if I were swimming beneath her again in the lagoon, the water shimmering about her, simultaneously enticing me and reminding me of what I was. "Julia!" I screamed. She ran to me. I reached out, only to be frustrated by the glass encasing my tank. "Wait for me!" I shouted, jumping the walls, causing the spectators to run in fear. Yet Julia waited, and we embraced there before the excited howls of Dog Boy and the jealous seven-eyed leers of Spider-Man. We went to dinner that night and later dancing. It felt just like old times. She'd come back to me, and now things would be different. I would make up for my past mistakes as a father. I would repay her for my betrayal. I was about to tell her exactly that as just past midnight we sat sipping cappuccinos on the patio of an outdoor cafe. "Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. The show is about to begin." "Don't be shy. The meek don't inherit anything." At first, I thought it was the ringmaster's father because the man looked like the ringmaster, but older, and he was dressed in a fisherman's hat and suspenders. I couldn't help but stare, and then I wasn't so sure it was his father. "Step right up and watch how the monster becomes a man. I mean, the man becomes a monster right before your eyes." "Pay no attention to it, Julia," I said. "Everything is beautiful, just like it was before. And don't worry, I promise to take care as a baby." Julia's face went white. Her green eyes, vast lagoons. "There is no baby," she said. "What?" "I left him in the woods after you walked out," she sobbed. "I was distraught. I couldn't face the baby alone. I left him in the place where you once told me you'd been happy." I hit her. My razor-sharp claws cut through her cheek. I hadn't wanted to. No, that's not true. I did want to. In that moment, that's all I wanted to do. "And you think I'm the monster," I said. "I didn't know what to do," she cried. "I'm sorry." "Ladies and gentlemen," the old man in suspenders continued, pulling a megaphone out from behind him, "witness the oldest and greatest story in the world." Julia screamed, tried to get away, but I wrapped my arms about her, held her there, gazing into those green eyes, and for a moment, I thought I could hide there. Then I took her head in my webbed paws and crushed her skull between them. Seconds later, I was swimming in irretrievable darkness. "I don't care," I screamed, dropping her limp body to the floor, wiping the blood from my scaly skin. "I don't care," I shouted as I turned on the crowd, raising my arms and howling at them. "Oh, but you do," said the old man in suspenders. "That's just the point. You do." I swatted his words away as I went out into the night, running from the shrieks and screams, the prayers and cries that met me in every alley, around every corner. I ran to the only place I could hide, making my cave home at the bottom. I only leave briefly to feed when the fish supply is low, and I don't lack for company. I have all of you, after all. As he finishes his story, the Gill Man leans in close, presses his puckered mouth to your ear. You feel his cold lips, can almost taste the brine. Your mouth moves, but you're shivering so much it's difficult to understand your words. "What was it you asked that caused me to run?" to leave my wife and child in the first place. I've had lots of time to think about it down in these murky depths. At the time, I told myself it was because the baby's face was alien, because he looked nothing like me, and that Julia was having an affair. But I know that wasn't it at all. The waters of our own mind are as murky as any lagoon, as full of tricks as any B-movie. It was the opposite. I'd seen myself in those tiny eyes, set deep in that puckered pink face. Somehow I'd gotten in there behind them, and I fought the overwhelming urge to squash that self I saw, to smash its head against the corner of the crib. This is why I chose to run. They say I don't belong in their world, that I'm from another time, a relic from the Devonian age. But we're more human than they are, I told Dog Boy one night. They think we are the relics, but they've got it reversed. If you live long enough with monsters, you see yourself as normal. That's what I told Dog Boy after a six-year-old girl screamed at the horror of his face. Our defects are evident, I said. We know who we are. Though even as I said it, I felt the lie festering underneath. We are, all of us, relics, waiting our turn, looking for a time that has passed, if it ever came at all. Today, we welcome you to our home. Now that you've heard my story, the story of us all, meet Wolfie, Frank, and the fiend without a face. Say hello to the mummy. Be careful when you shake his hand. Don't pull the whole arm off. Give a kiss to the mole man and the count. Watch out, he bites. Oh, and here's the thing. Still trying to figure out what makes him tick. The fly is playing cards in the corner with the blob. You'll have to excuse them. They're not very social. As you can see, we're all here. Where's Godzilla, you ask? We've got a special area in the back of the cave for him, a cavern where the larger monsters are kept. He and King Kong have quite a time with a 50-foot woman. Know what I mean? We're all here in this cave beneath the lagoon. None of us ever really dies. Yes, we die on celluloid so that everyone can be happy and everything beautiful again. But in reality, we live on and on in the dark recesses of our own misery. And there you have it. That's my story for what it's worth. So, how can I explain such an act? I can't. I'm only a poor beast after all. Thank you.